I am delighted that the agency family could all meet here today. I would like to take this opportunity to send greetings to the family that is overseas. You will appreciate that this is a very difficult assignment, although at the same time pleasant, for one who is accustomed only to face a camera or a microphone, because there is no case upon the record where a camera or a microphone got up and walked out or dozed off or talked to its neighbor. So should you be bored in the course of the next few minutes, I suggest you just visit amongst yourselves or discuss the weather. In my previous occupation, profession, if it was a profession, it was occasionally alleged that I merely pointed to people, that I was in fact a pointer. So I shall begin by doing that here today and introducing to you first the Deputy Director, Don Wilson.
Well, it is also a great pleasure for me to be here and see all of you and meet you at least in this kind of a relationship, which certainly isn't very intimate. I have already started and I hope to continue, as I know Mr. Murrow and Mr. Sorensen also will be doing, to try and get around to all of our 10 buildings, I understand we have, in Washington and meet everybody personally. And I really mean this. I expect to do this. And I just want you to know we are all aware that there are 10 buildings and everybody isn't in that grand palace on 1776 Pennsylvania. I thought it might be a good idea while we are all here just to introduce you to our element heads. Many of you know them already or know some of them, but it's always a good idea to get a look at the man you're getting the memo from. So I thought I'd just ask them to rise. Let's not have any applause. Let's just introduce them. This is Turner Shelton, Motion Picture Service. Mr. Handley, IMG. Mr. Roberts of Africa, Director of Africa. Mr. Nielsen, Far East. Mr. Hutchison, IPS. Mr. Phillips, Europe. Mr. Stevens, Research. Mr. Conger Reynolds, IOC. Mr. Wheeler, Television. Mr. Loomis, Director of the Voice of America. Mr. King, Middle East and South Asia. That's Mr. Irwin, a brand new face, who's our General Counsel. Mr. Evans, who's acting head of IR. Mr. McNichol, Security, and Mr. Schmidt, Assistant Director for Administration. Give him a hand. I do want to say one more thing. I do hope we'll be able to meet each other personally. I think we all want to steal a leaf from President Kennedy's book, which calls for much more direct communication. Now, I don't guarantee you'll be receiving a phone call from the President of the United States, although you've read in your paper you do receive, people do receive them these days, but I'll practically promise that you may be receiving phone calls from Mr. Murrow and myself and Mr. Sorensen, and I certainly hope this will be the case. Anyway, it is very nice to be here and very nice to be with you.
If I may make a tentative suggestion, if you are going to make phone calls, perhaps it would be advisable to think twice before doing so. The Deputy for Plans and Policy, Tom Sorensen.
I feel something like that poor fellow who was on CBS, whose program on CBS was immediately following Edward R. Murrow and the news. He knew we had a large audience, but it was a very tough act to follow. Many of your faces, most of, perhaps if not most, at least a great many of your faces are not unfamiliar to me. This is my 10th year with USIA and its predecessor agencies, and I must confess that there has not been a dull day in 9.5 years, and from every indication, the days ahead are going to be equally exciting. One of the things that has impressed me in recent months, and I've communicated this to Ed Murrow and Don Wilson, is the increasing professionalism of USIA. I think that the strides we have made in the last decade are real and are great and are important. Perhaps I take a parochial view being in USIA, but I am convinced that the role that this agency plays in the conduct of U.S. foreign affairs cannot be underestimated. It is important. You are important. And that's why I am delighted and honored to continue my association with this agency and with you.
I don't know whether it's permitted under the bureaucratic rules, but I assume that we are all here today receiving portal-to-portal pay. Is that right, Lou? I had prepared a rather lengthy document, a statement of purpose, of objective, of policy, and when it came out of the typewriter, it was about the most turgid document that I have encountered. And in the last month, I have encountered a high degree of turgidity, not emanating from this agency, I might say. I would like to put one rumor to rest at the outset. It was rumored that I had departed television because there was being created a new program to be called Mr. Ed. And this program was to feature, indeed, to star a talking horse. And it was felt that this title might blur my image, and therefore that was the reason I was departing the fields of television. It is untrue. I am completely aware that a much-talking bureaucrat is an ill-tuned instrument, so I shall not delay you for any considerable length of time. I have had a degree of experience with this agency, particularly abroad. I have sat on one or two task forces even before they were task forces. I have seen much of the work and indeed a degree of dedication demonstrated on the part of the people who are serving in posts abroad. And I would like, perhaps belatedly, to say my thanks to them for their assistance when I was merely a reporter and doing what reporters generally do, asking them to do the impossible for me. I would begin, I think, by paraphrasing Mr. Churchill. I did not become the director of this agency to preside over its liquidation or to apologize for it. I have had the opportunity in the last few weeks to meet most of the heads of divisions and media. On a half dozen occasions, I have had to ask men who were due for assignment overseas or to the War College or were due to go off on a most attractive fellowship if they would stay on for another year, and without exception, and at considerable sacrifice and personal inconvenience, they have all said without a single exception, "We will do whatever you think is best for the agency." This, I must say, I was not altogether prepared for. The other evening, a few reporters that I used to know were commiserating with me, and they said, "There you are. in that bureaucracy surrounded by a group of incompetents who couldn't possibly make a living out in the competitive world of news and information, and we give you our deepest sympathy. To which I replied that on the basis of 1 month's unsalaried experience, I would undertake to staff either a network or a newspaper out of this agency and make it competitive with anything that now exists. There has been some reference occasionally to financial sacrifice. I trust that this is ended because I did not purchase this position, and I am aware that others in the agency have also made considerable, though less well-publicized, sacrifices. For the future, I do not believe that we can rest on either old slogans or old programs. I think we must, insofar as we can, disenthrall ourselves and take a fresh look at what we are doing in all aspects of the agency's activities. I do not mean by that that we are going to attempt to supervise in detail everything that is being done. I do mean that we should ask ourselves as frequently as possible why we are undertaking a given activity, what purpose it is designed to achieve. As Mr. Truman was wont to say, the ultimate buck will rest here as it comes up. But ideas and suggestions must also come up, and they will be welcomed and given the most careful consideration. I would hope that to the extent possible, we will be able to make this agency a service agency as flexible and as responsive to the demands of the posts abroad as it can possibly be. And I would like here to remark parenthetically that the foreign personnel, the local employees at the posts abroad, are really the sinew of the operation. They remain there while some of our colleagues compete furiously in order to go out and serve with them under pleasant circumstances. That, I suggest, is likewise true of the entire agency, that basically the work is done by the secretaries, by the telephone operators, and by the people who get none of the credit and directly or indirectly share some of the blame. I would hope that we could make this a prideful agency. One of our difficulties, of course, is that we have no constituency. What we do is for export, and that most of it is invisible. So it means that we are not going to get great lashings of pride from the public, that we have to derive our pride from the satisfaction of a job well and truly done. I would like to say a word about the climate in which we operate. This administration is aware of the power of the mass media. They know its uses, know its dangers. It is an administration that is receptive to the use of the tools with which we work. I think we will find as the months go on that the cooperation between this agency and the executive departments of the government will improve and indeed flourish. On at least two occasions, in small meetings, very small, the President has gone out of his way to say how important he regards the work of this agency. This he did not say casually. Perhaps he did not say it for publication. If he didn't, I shall find out. But I felt entitled and indeed obliged to report that fact to you. I think we shall be operating against the background of a consistent, coherent, humanistic foreign policy. We all recognize that this agency can be no better and do no better job than is provided by the policies and the programs of this nation. I am persuaded that this administration will operate not only with a degree of dedication, but with a steadiness, a firmness in which there is found no arrogance, no bellicosity, but at the same time, no disposition to flinch or falter in the face of adversity. We shall operate, insofar as we can, with maximum flexibility and informality. I am aware, or perhaps I should more accurately say, I am becoming aware that flexibility is not easily come by in an agency of this sort. But I am persuaded that if we operate on the assumption that ideas are important, that they will be given hospitality by those of us charged with the making of the decisions, we can produce a more flexible organization. The late Haywood Broun once said, "No body politic is healthy until it begins to itch." I would like to see this agency itch a little and feel that new ideas will be welcomed, that departure from past practices will not be regarded as heretical, that we have no desire to sanctify the status quo, and that change is welcome. I would hope that increasingly in all media, we would not only ask ourselves that important question, why are we doing it, but that we would also try to deal more with ideals than with images. An image, as I understand it, is something you fit into. An ideal is something to which you aspire. And I have the feeling that history records one consistent development of all nations in time of crisis. And it is that they dig back into their own history, their own tradition, their own mythology, their own folklore for sustenance and inspiration. And I think that we are obviously in a state of crisis. And I think we must, in the conduct of this agency, be true to the heritage and the traditions of this country. I think we must recognize that democracy is always unfinished business, that we cannot expect emerging nations to imitate us in detail. We cannot be surprised when nations to which we have acted as both midwife and fairy godmother fail to pursue precisely the policies and the practices that we advocate. Our concern must be to give them information, to persuade them that we share their hopes and their dreams, and under no circumstances to expect slavish imitation. I would suggest that we are to a considerable extent involved in a process of education. I remember during the Blitz in London, losing my third office, scrabbling in the ruins for two essentials of a reporter's equipment, a typewriter and the remnants of a bottle of scotch, and I came across a tattered page of a pamphlet that had been written by an old professor of mine. And the last sentence read, "Education is the most important project in the world today." Well, at that time, it seemed to me a rather ridiculous statement, because I, at least, was involved with more urgent matters, such as finding a new office. But the more I've thought of it, the more true that sentiment seems to become. And I think in the true sense, we're involved in education, and I would hope that we would not delude ourselves into believing that these new means of communication, radio, television, all the rest, are in any sense a substitute for the face-to-face communication and conversation through which ideas and, more importantly, conviction can be conveyed. I think that is of very considerable importance here in our relation with foreign students, groups of visiting leaders, where we have an opportunity to demonstrate here in Washington and in New York that we have a concern not only for their welfare, but a healthy curiosity about their culture and a willingness to explain what appears to many of them the inscrutable peculiarities of our culture and our system of government. I would hope that we could make the policies of this country everywhere intelligible and wherever possible palatable, that we would not be discouraged when mistakes are made, that we would be willing to admit them, in some cases even anticipate them. And it would be helpful if you see a mistake looming up on the horizon, if we were told in advance, in order that, not that we might take to the shelter, but rather be prepared to rectify it in the shortest possible time. I would hope, too, that we would remember that we are not just spending the taxpayers' dollar or earning dollars, that we are in a very real sense playing a part in determining the destiny of the free world. I would also hope that I'll put it another way. Having once been an amateur student of history, if I had my choice of a time and place in which to live and work, I would choose this time and in this agency, and I am sure that all of you who have served much longer than I, and particularly some of my old friends who have over the years acquired much scar tissue in the service of this agency, feel exactly the same. Thank you very much for coming. We will all try to come round and meet you personally at the earliest possible moment. I have already discovered in my short time in Washington that asking questions is rather easier than answering them. But Mr. Wilson suggests that if you wanted to spare another 15 minutes, I might try to field a question or two. Or are you all eager for lunch? Well, if there are... Oh, sorry. The question came from the Persian service of the Voice of America, and it was whether in this administration the Persian service on the Voice would be reinstated. I'm sorry, that's an answer I cannot give you now. We will, what is the proper phrase? Take it under consideration. But I assure you we will. Is that
good? How do you view today's controversy about your film, Harvest of the Shame? There are two editorials.
Question came from the Pakistan service, direct and penetrating, as I have learned to expect from all my friends in Pakistan. How, in view of the fact that there have been two editorials, do I view the program Harvest of Shame? I view it as I did. It was a program produced for domestic consumption. As was suggested in one of the editorials to which you referred, my telephone call was both foolish and futile, and that I did not become aware of which hat I was wearing. This may well be an accurate summary, but I still hope... I hope that in spite of this, I shall still have a place to put the hat for. Thank you all very much. I wish you good luck, and we shall be coming around to see you as soon as may be. Thank you all very much.